and welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I'm GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns, and we welcome you guys back to this final edition of the 2017 season breakdown edition. Kind of looking at the 31-0 loss to the Wisconsin Badgers, yes, but we're also going to touch on a lot of different things. We're going to have Derek Burns here too, and I'll introduce him here in a short minute to kind of help break down the Wisconsin game, look at the outlook for this team going forward in 2018, 2019, and going forward offensively, defensively. We'll also touch on the Demry Croft news, the Victor Viramontes news. Quarterback has been quite interesting to follow since Saturday, since Minnesota last had a game. So we have a lot to get into tonight, boys. And joining us, as always, I already mentioned him, former Golden Gopher offensive lineman, my second cousin, Derek Burns. Derek, we're already here at the end of the season somehow, a 5-7 Gopher team. I think this season has gone by too fast, or maybe a recruiting season for me has gotten here far too quickly, considering Fleck is on an airplane here as we record. How do I know that? Because, unfortunately, it's my creepy job to know that. So, Derek, how are things for you tonight? And how much did you enjoy watching that Badger film back?
Well, I'm doing well. Thank you, guys, for having me back. It wasn't a lot of fun to watch. I was surprised in a positive way at a couple things, but it's being in that it's a rival, and you know, there's a lot of separation, unfortunately, between the two teams from a skill and an execution standpoint. The programs are on two different levels right now, so it was a bit rough, and especially it being a rival, things get emotional, and I think a lot of people are upset and angry, and as they should be. That's part of having some passion about a rivalry. So, but there's
70-0 over the last 8 quarters for Minnesota. I'm sure many fans are aware. Many fans are a little bit bitter, as you have every right to be, considering what the defense and the offense have looked like in the month of November. But I think we're here to provide a little bit of perspective tonight with Derek and I, and of course with Mr. Producer Luke.
All right, so let's get into this and maybe close out this season quickly, just talking Wisconsin again. They lost 31-0. I think this is like the 14th year in a row that they've lost, not trying to rub that in any sort of way. I've heard as much as many of you are that are listening. But, I mean, the facts are the facts. This wasn't even close, basically, from the get-go. I will say this, Derek, and I'd like your perspective. I actually kind of liked the game plan they went in with, but to your point, it just didn't seem like they could execute.
Yeah, I thought first and foremost defensively, they got out of character a little bit, took a few more risks than what they normally did, and they really committed to stopping Wisconsin's run. And I know people will probably point out that, you know, the stats by the end of the game, were not in their favor, but I thought the defense frankly played probably their best quarter and a half of the year, to start the game. They got penetration from the front seven. The Gophers defensive front seven, again, was geared to stopping the run. They played a lot of man coverage and even mixed in some man press coverage, which again was uncharacteristic of them. So, I agree. I think that that was their game plan, to try to force Wisconsin to throw the ball as much as they, especially early in the game when before the score got out of hand. And unfortunately for Minnesota, Wisconsin had a lot of success throwing the ball, and I think that's partially Minnesota and some deficiencies they have in pass defense. But I think also part of it was you have to give credit to Wisconsin's quarterback. He struggled this year from time to time with turnovers and some inaccuracy, and that just didn't show up on Saturday. He was almost lights out, you know, on hitting his spots and reading the defense. So they were able to pull away eventually, you know, with the offense not being able to match things on Minnesota's side. And, and the game got lopsided as it went on, and then the script changed, and there wasn't much they could do.
I mean, you look at what Alex Hornibrook was able to do on Saturday. Very disheartening for me, considering, again, I don't like Wisconsin as much as the next guy. I know I'm supposed to be objective media guy, but just the way they're sustained success in men's basketball and football, opposed to a Minnesota team I've covered here for going on my 7th season, has been about the complete opposite. I'm not even envious of the fans. I'm envious of the media members that are able to cover a consistent winning team. Alex Hornibrook is the Mitch Leidner of Wisconsin football, where everybody in that fan base can't stand him. He'd thrown an interception in every single Big Ten game. He comes into this Gopher game, and he's able to go 17 of 21 for 3 touchdowns and no interceptions. It's just Minnesota's defense the last month of the season is the cure to any and all diseases that an offense had coming in. Derek, I believe you mentioned it already. I mean, Minnesota's defense played, I thought, extremely well for the first 6 drives of the game. The issue was the defense looked at the offense, and the offense starts the game with 5 3 and outs. And you can't do that if you're going to beat a undefeated Wisconsin team at home. Now, I don't know if Wisconsin is going to make the college football playoff. I don't know if they're going to beat Ohio State this weekend. But this is a more talented team than Minnesota saw in 2014 and 2016, where they had Wisconsin on the ropes in the second half, and they weren't able to get it done. Minnesota is, again, the defense, again, Stephen Richardson, again, I talked about it on Twitter after the game. I think he is going to be one of my favorite Gophers of all time to have covered. I think he is going to be the most underappreciated defensive players. He's going to be in that conversation that I'll ever cover, someone with almost 30 tackles for loss in his career. I just think that front 7 played very well as a whole to start the game. But the issue is, as the game went on, the Minnesota defense got tired. The Wisconsin offense got more and more cracks. Their offensive line was able to get more and more chunk plays in the running game. And this was just a defense that, again, without Antoine Winfield, with a banged up Jonathan Celestine, and just being on the field too much over the last month of the season, they caved in. And then they certainly didn't get any help from their offense, Derek. I mean, I mentioned it. Start the game, Demaryius Croft, former Minnesota quarterback. We'll get into that here in a little bit. 5 straight drives to start the game. First 5, you know. When I was texting Derek to start this last week, I was like, Derek, in what plausible way does Minnesota have a shot here? And you mentioned to Derek, Minnesota had been able to move the ball in the first quarter or two against opposing defenses. So I talked about it in my keys to the game. I took Derek's knowledge that if Minnesota could get off to a hot start offensively, maybe they can make this a game. Well, when you go 5 straight 3 and outs, Derek, that doesn't do a whole lot for your offensive confidence. Your defensive confidence in the game kind of went pear-shaped from there. So, I mean, what was your assessment in terms of what went wrong? I guess maybe the better question is, did anything go right for this Gopher offense on Saturday?
Well, I thought if you look at it from separated out into the passing and the running game, in the run game, I don't know that there's a better way to break it down beyond just that Minnesota was physically overmatched. That's both a factor of Minnesota being very banged up on the offensive line, not being able to run the ball consistently for any of the last few weeks. And then you add in the fact that Wisconsin's front 7, particularly their linebackers and I'll throw their secondary run support, exceptional. Their speed at the linebacker position, especially what they can cover a lot of space in the run game. It's very hard to, it was very difficult for Minnesota to get anything out on the edge. And they didn't have the players with health in the middle of the line to get any sort of push. So the run game, I just thought they were very limited in what they could do and even what they could make from a play calling perspective. And in the pass game, I think unfortunately we saw more of what we had seen in previous weeks, which was difficult for those guys to get separation. And then in the few times that they did and got a crack here and there. They had a drop early in the game. It was likely a first down. Couple good pass placements later. I think more than one drop. Good defense on a couple plays by Wisconsin where the ball is placed where it needs to be. But, the cornerback or safety is just there in coverage. So, and I don't think they felt that the coaches felt that they had enough weapons or things on the offensive side for passing that they could really wanted to resort to doing that and extending the game, stopping the clock. I'm not saying they rolled over and admitted defeat, but I felt like the offensive coaches felt that if anything, they could try to find something that worked in the run game, but Wisconsin's defensive front 7 was just too fast for them.
Yeah. And I mean, you mentioned it, Wisconsin's defense, according to Football Study Hall, was the number 1 rated defense in the country coming into this game. Minnesota's offense as a whole coming into the Wisconsin game was rated the 115th. So you can see where the mismatch was the entire day. And Derek mentioned the drops once again. I believe two of Demery's first three passes on the day. One hits Nate Wozniak in the hands. It's dropped. What would have been a first down. And then Philip Howard gets hit in the face mask with a ball. And I don't know if you can hear that, but I'm rubbing my temples right now. Just kind of the way it was for Minnesota's offense the last month of the season. Luke, you're the one that kind of pointed this out to me, that when you look at Minnesota's offensive performance percentile scores the last five games of the season, they were 9% against an Iowa team, 14% against Michigan. Then they jump all the way up to 94. And then the last 2 weeks of the season, 4% and 1%. Not good. So, I was talking to, one source close to the program, and they described kind of Minnesota's offense as bringing a butter knife to a gunfight in terms of what they had personnel-wise to face Wisconsin. I mean, they're not wrong in terms of what Minnesota didn't have available. No Tyler Johnson, no Shannon Brooks, no Demetrius Douglas, no Eric Carter. Again, you have a hobbled Brandon Lingen as well. So it is what it is. And, I felt bad for Rodney Smith because Rodney Smith played his ass off. He ran hard the entire game. He ran with what he was able to do. And we'll get into it a little bit later. But again, Rodney Smith just falls shy, I believe 23 yards shy of 1,000 on the season, and just wasn't able to do a whole lot else besides Minnesota's offense there. So, Demery ends up taking a lot of sacks on the day. So just not a whole lot of things to really discuss further than that, Luke, in terms of that's where Minnesota's at right now. They didn't have a whole lot of offensive firepower to go against Wisconsin. They couldn't sustain drives. Yes, the vanilla play calling was extremely frustrating to watch, but when you know that you can't complete a pass, it's tough to do much more than kind of run three times when you're not sure if your receiver's going to drop it, bout it up in the air, and it would be interception or what it may be. So, you want to start, what do you want to talk about here next, Luke?
Okay. So if we look at the season as a whole, 5-7 probably didn't meet the expectations of most fans, especially coming off a 9-win season the year before. But the fact of the matter is, like, we had big questions regardless of who is going to be the head coach, especially on the offensive side of the ball. So I'd kind of like to do kind of in a way more of like a state of the program. Where are we at? Coming off a 5-7 season, look at kind of both sides of the ball. What do we have? What do we need to backfill? And, what's kind of the timeline? Not timeline, maybe isn't the right word, but how do we kind of set expectations that are somewhat realistic, right? I think both Ryan, you and I, we talked multiple times that we expected a pretty significant drop off, coming into this season. We thought they could be at best maybe a 7-win team, and at worst, worse than even this. But the fact of the matter is they're 5-7 and there's a lot of room to improve. And quite frankly, I've also brought this up previously. I think that it's very obvious that Fleck went forward with, wins aren't the important thing right now. It's establishing, what he calls a culture, and also establishing accountability. And that's largely what he got, what he did. And I think maybe Ryan, you should go into the whole Demery Croft situation now that he's no longer there. But that's a part of that accountability, because when we talked about going into the season, we expected Demery to start, and then we were shocked that the decision wasn't made. Right. And then all of a sudden we ride Connor Rota for, I don't know, 5 games. Right. I mean, yeah, just take us where are we at right now? Let's just look at quarterback first.
Yeah, it's been quite the 48, 72 hours here since everything that's gone down at quarterback. So it was, we came to learn at Gopher Illustrated on Sunday that, hey, Demery Croft's not at the banquet. Oh, well, what's the backstory there? Oh, well, that's not good. And then it's learned that he has his release from the University of Minnesota, and Demery Croft is no longer going to be a Minnesota Golden Gopher. So a lot of different things that have been spanning on for about the duration of Demery Croft's career, and from when Jerry Kill signed him. Everything kind of blends together right now. Whether it was Tracy Clays, I mean, there were issues there under Tracy Clays in terms of off the field deals. And then earlier this season, obviously Demery is suspended, and you know, it, there's a meeting with between Fleck, his parents, or excuse me, Demery, his parents, and Fleck. Things don't really go well there, and that's kind of the final straw in the deal. And both sides decide to kind of step apart. And now Demery has announced his transfer. He's got his release. And every snap that we thought was a meaningful snap to be giving to Demery Croft, because I still believe in my eyes he gave Minnesota the best opportunity to win. Plus, he was the younger of the two options. He's no longer here. So what are we looking at for 2018 and beyond? We're looking at 8 collegiate snaps from Seth Green in garbage time against Middle Tennessee. Minnesota likely, when we're looking at coming into this 2018 season, folks, will not have a quarterback on the roster that has thrown a Division I forward pass. Now, the good news is Minnesota got their top target at quarterback in terms of junior college quarterback from California, Victor Viramontes, someone that was a high 4-star kid back in 2016. And again, the story goes, for those who haven't heard it, he was committed to Jim Harbaugh at Michigan for many months under the promise that he was going to play quarterback. Victor is a fantastic athlete, and Michigan started – the rumors started getting out that they might want to move him to a different position. He got word. He decommitted. He then goes to California, Cal Berkeley, to play quarterback for Sonny Dykes. And Sonny Dykes is subsequently fired. Sonny Dykes had told Victor that he was going to be Jared Goff's replacement. Again, Jared Goff being the number one pick in the 2016 draft, someone that many fans will know is the Los Angeles Rams quarterback that's had a very good season. So Sonny Dykes gets fired. A new regime comes in. Viramontes figures out that he's not going to be a part of that plan, so he is a bounce back to Riverside Community College this year, where he played. Someone that averaged over 7 yards a carry, 22 rushing touchdowns passing wise, folks. He completed over 60% of his passes, a 2-to-1 touchdown to interception ratio. So someone that I know from talking with a source just before we started recording here, Minnesota is ecstatic to have because of his work ethic, his leadership, his athletic ability. He's immediately one of the best athletes on the team. And this may sound familiar to you because it kind of sounds like what Minnesota had in Chris Streveler a few years ago. And I know some of you are maybe shaking your head thinking, oh, great, Chris Streveler again. I don't think the issue was Chris Streveler, because Chris Streveler has now gone out to South Dakota. I understand that's going from the Big Ten to the Missouri Valley. But the Missouri Valley, yes, being 1AA, but it's, in my opinion, the best FCS conference out there. And he was the offensive player of the year. He was throwing for over 300 yards a game and looking good doing so. I know many coaches out in the Dakotas that couldn't believe that Minnesota couldn't find a position for him, if not at quarterback. So, again, I think what you're looking at in Vic is someone that he is a junior college kid. He's going to have 3 years to play three. He's going to sign in December, be on campus in January. He's going to have 9 months to learn the offense. And he's likely your starter, potentially challenging Tanner Morgan, of course, for that 2018 spot. And he's someone that has a lot of athletic ability. So, again, no more Demery Croft. You look at Croft's kind of career here at Minnesota, it ends in his final 6 starts. He doesn't complete double-digit passes in any of them. Yes, I understand. You don't have to tell me. Minnesota had about 18 drops the last 4 games. That never really helped him out. But I believe he completed about 41% of his passes on the season. That mental clock in his head never seemed to really continue to spring forward, as his sack rate compared to Demery, or compared to Connor Rhoda's, was substantially higher. So the quarterback position is one that is going to be extremely inexperienced, along with about every other position on offense when you look at it going forward. You lose Kobe McCrary, and you lose his 94 carries, his 8 touchdowns on the year. But the one I kind of want to really talk about is Shannon Brooks, Luke. I mean, Shannon Brooks doesn't play in the final 5 or 6 games of the year because he's in the concussion protocol. Folks, that's an extreme red flag, especially when we just had, you know, Nick Conley just put out there that he had 5 concussions at the University of Minnesota and he had to give it up. Well, you just have a guy who's been in the concussion protocol for 5 to 6 weeks. I mean, I think there's a real chance Shannon Brooks isn't back because of that. Again, concussions are nothing to joke around with, especially with all the new data we get every year about it. So you're potentially going to be losing Shannon Brooks, and we'll see what happens with Rodney Smith. I know I've talked about the theory of, you know, he could potentially chance the NFL draft waters, considering he almost finished with back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons in the Big Ten. And again, more times than not, you're going to at least have a running back test the waters in terms of what is his draft value. Now, he's probably going to be a late-round guy, but we'll have to see. Again, that's right there, you're looking at Kobe McCrary's 94 carries, Shannon Brooks, 79 carries, so about 175 carries there. You look at the quarterbacks, they combine for about 75 carries. You're looking at almost 300 carries that are going to have to be replaced. You look at tight end, no more Nate Wozniak, no more Brandon Lingan. So you're going to have two brand new tight ends there, whether that's Ko Keith, Colton Beebe, Jake Paulson. Either way, not a lot of guys with a lot of collegiate experience. Wide receiver is going to be completely new. Tyler Johnson is the only one I think that is assured coming back as a starter. You're going to have Demetrius Douglas in a full season, maybe Chris Ottman-Bell for a full season, and then plus the 2018 recruits coming in. So it is, I don't know that people want to hear it. I think people think it's an excuse, but I just ran through the roster, folks, and especially when you look at the offensive line too. You were going to be replacing both guards. I think Minnesota's going to bring in a junior college tackle to kind of help Sam Schluter get another year older, potentially slide him inside potentially as well. But this offense, looking forward, is going to be extremely, extremely inexperienced, and it is what it is at this point. So I think that's your offensive rundown, Luke.
Well, you know, one thing I want to bring up before we turn to Derek to kind of get more of a schematic look at things is, you know, in this modern day of college athletics, it wouldn't be surprising to see someone even like a Rodney Smith even test the grad transfer market, right? Like, he technically was a redshirt. He probably, I'm just going to go on a limb and assume he's going to graduate by the end of the spring. You know, that's very conceivable he could go that route. You know, as you just touted, there's not a lot of a lot of experience coming back. It's definitely something he potentially could pursue.
Sure. I mean, absolutely. Again, you know, I think it's an option now. I don't want to get people in a panic.
I don't know anything. I know nothing.
I know you're just speculating, but I think it's good speculation.
But so. I follow college basketball, right? And grad transfers in college basketball are incredibly prevalent, right? It's almost, I mean, basketball is so much more looking out for me than even football is, but it's definitely starting to translate into football as well as an opportunity. So
it certainly is. Plus, I think, again, if for folks who also don't know, it's been already announced that wide receivers, Hunter Register, Rashad Still aren't going to be back with the team. Rashad Still didn't even dress on Saturday. There's been speculation that he was even kicked off the team before then for, again, that's another kid that's been battling a lot through off the field issues, and it just didn't work out here. So again, and Derek, I know that we talked about it here, and I don't know how comfortable you are speaking about it, but you mentioned it when you came into the Golden Gopher football program. You were in Glenn Mason's first year. We just finished PJ Fleck's first year. I think kids are starting to see if they fit in with the new staff now that they've gone through it for a whole year. And could you kind of provide some perspective on what some of these kids might be thinking? Again, they've gone through year one. They know what it's probably going to be like. So what was it like for you after year one of a transition year when you were here with Glenn Mason?
Sure. Yeah, it was. It's interesting because you're at a position right now, the Gophers are right now, that most of the team, you know, 80%, Ryan, you could probably tell me exactly, but 80% of the team was not recruited by the current staff. And so my first year of football was Glenn Mason's first year, and it was a similar situation. 80 or 90% of our team was not recruited by him. And so there are a lot of changes, you know, without going through and stating each point of the obvious, there are a lot of changes, new systems, new schemes, new coaching staff, totally new off-the-field disciplinary rules, and not just, you know, a level of discipline, but just what's important to those coaches. And so there's a lot of change for people to take, those guys that have been there for a while and invested a lot into the program. And now it's a new either schematic change, a new way of thinking. Some guys aren't playing that were before, or they're playing in a different role. And I can sum it up by saying, and I'm sure that this is what's happening now with the Gophers team. The reaction to that is totally mixed. You have some guys that don't take well to that, that don't react well to that, that really are, you know, very dismissive. And it's like you said, it's not for them, and that's okay. And they either choose to part ways or they really just mentally check out. And you have other guys at the complete opposite end of the spectrum that they dig themselves in and say, look, you know, I might have been a guy that was getting every snap and now I'm going to get 10 snaps a game, but I'm going to find a way to make an impact that way. I'm in this for the long haul. So, and everything in between. So it's a difficult situation with every coaching change. And it's hard on those guys again, that have invested, and you've got new guys coming in that are recruited to a specific system that are chosen by those coaches. So these guys are kind of looking over their shoulder. I wouldn't say between the players, there's a lot of, you spend so much time together, it becomes kind of a family thing, brotherly thing. So you kind of have each other's backs, but at the same time, it's tough for some of those guys. And some of them, it's taken at all different levels of the spectrum, but I'm sure there's a lot of that going on, throughout this season, and certainly now that the season's over and, guys are looking at their options, and it's just something that you have to work through.
Hey, Derek, just out of curiosity, I'd like to get your take, on kind of this schematic approach to football, or to Gopher offense, really, in general, because, basically what we saw under Kill and Clay's is significantly different than what we saw this year under Fleck and Shiraka. So I'd be curious to get your perspective, what we saw a little bit this year and how that might evolve going into the future seasons, particularly next year and the following.
Sure. Yeah, I was really curious this year to see. I enjoy schematics and different X's and O's and things like that. So I wanted to see not only what this staff was going to do and how things were going to be different, but how they would use the players that they had and the guys coming in and how they would fold them into their system. And I think we learned a few things this year on both sides of the ball that would give us a little bit of insight into the future. I would say, in terms of how this year unfolded, my takeaway was, I did think that there were a lot of, and this isn't a right or wrong, but I did think that there were a lot of guys that were perhaps good players and still are good players that didn't fit the system exactly. There was a change in the system. I can give you a couple examples. I've talked about this, so it may be a bit repetitive, but on the offensive side of the ball, the way that this staff uses the receivers, the fullbacks, running backs, tight ends and wideouts, is totally different than the previous staff. And so a good example is the way that the tight ends were used under the previous staff. A lot of the route combinations and route trees that were used were, everything was pushed to the sidelines, a lot of flood and flat routes. So you saw the tight ends very involved in the passing game, the fullbacks very involved in the passing game, slot receivers involved in the passing game. This staff was a big change in that those positions are used primarily to drive safeties and drive things down the field to clear things out. And they use the outside or X receivers to run like deep crossing patterns. And so, we saw that. We saw guys like Tyler Johnson have good success, but I think that it's a growing pain. I think it was a bit of a growing pain because they need time to recruit to that system. And so you had some guys that did a little bit better in the previous system that I think struggled a bit in this one. And I think, Luke, you early on brought up, do you fit the players to the scheme or the scheme to the players? And I think as the year wore on, we definitely saw that the staff has an overriding scheme. They're going to recruit to that. And within that, they try to do things that they could given what they had. But I think there was a little bit of a growing pain there. And then real quickly on the defensive side, the way that the previous staff chose to defend the run was altogether different. They used a very wide defensive end techniques, and they used their safeties to come up and almost every play defend that C gap or defend the off tackle running and try to funnel everything to those safeties. This staff, I think we saw this year, like to use those safeties and wanted to play zone when they could and use those safeties to roam and try to force teams to throw interceptions and be a little bit more opportunistic in the turnover game. So again, you have a situation where maybe some of those guys in the secondary, guys like Duke McGee come to mind, they were recruited to a system where he was going to be downhill playing in the box, playing the run on every down. And he did that this year to the best of his ability when called upon. But again, I don't think that was part of their overriding scheme. So I think we learned that a little bit this year. How would I think that looks, and we got a little bit of a peek into the future. What I'll say on the offensive side is I think from my perspective, this offense, as it gets going and the the talent comes in that's recruited to their scheme. I think that the offense is going to be predicated on a run pass option quarterback and deep threats or deep crossing threats from the wide receiver position. I think many times offenses take the theory or the plan that they're going to run the ball, force defenses to come up in the box. And if you add players to the box, then they're going to throw deep. I think this offensive staff and scheme takes a different approach. I think they want to develop passing threats. I don't think they're going to throw every play. I don't think they're going to be a run and shoot or an air raid offense by any means. In fact, I think they probably want to run the ball, most of the time. But I think they want to develop those wide receivers threats so they can throw defenses out of adding guys to the box. We saw this year, as much as the offense struggled and as tough as it was to watch sometimes, when they had even numbers in the box, they did have success running. And so if they can bring the guys in here and recruit to a system to develop wide receiver threats, they're going to force defenses to play with even numbers in the box. And that's where the running game, I think, is going to start to work for them. So it's a little bit flip-flop from some of the traditional concepts that teams might have to run until defense loads the box and then you throw. I think it's really going to be predicated on run pass options in the quarterback and develop threats in the wide receiver game.
So, Ryan, I guess from your perspective, before we maybe transition to talk a little bit more,
I don't know
defense,
that there's much more to say there. Like, I think Derek.
He covered it really well. But do you feel like from a recruiting perspective that matches like his assumptions right now?
Yeah, I mean, especially you look at the wide receiver position, one that hasn't been good for Minnesota for quite some time. Minnesota has really never had two threats at the wide receiver position at once. Now, I don't know if they're going to have that in 2018, because I mentioned it, you're going to be playing a lot of freshmen and Tyler Johnson. Tyler Johnson now is the elder statesman in the Gopher wide receiver room, and he is a sophomore. You know, where Minnesota should be having redshirt seniors contributing, that just hasn't happened. It didn't happen, and here we are. So, you know, you're looking at guys like Rashad Bateman, Jornell Manns, Eric Gibson, Harry Van Dyne, Demetrius Douglas, and Chris Ottman-Bell. I mean, six guys I just mentioned off the top of my head to put together with potentially Tyler Johnson and Drew Hymelewski and Philip Howard. I think you're going to have a lot of youth there at the position. I think Bateman, Manns are going to bring in some immediate talent. So, again, as Minnesota continues to develop some talent at these different positions, I think it's going to be pretty good. Again, they need to get some talent in at wide receiver so they can help out the quarterback, which, again, if you have a receiving threat, that means that you can't dedicate as many men to the box, which means the running game benefits from that, especially if you have an actual dual threat quarterback back there in the read option game. And he also, again, can do an RPO offense where if the defense continues to suck in their linebackers and maybe the slot corner, you can run a slant or a post behind him, and that's how you get Tyler Johnson 75 to the house. So I agree. Again, Minnesota just needs to get some talent in here, and recruiting-wise, Minnesota has their highest-rated recruiting class in this decade committed, especially at the wide receiver position. I think they're doing very well right now with Matt Simon and PJ Fleck there. So it's going to take some time. They're going to be young here in 18 and 19, but I think once they get a little bit of experience in the Big Ten under their belt, I think things will improve.
Okay, so Derek, you touched a little bit on the defense. I'd like to just go on that a little bit more. The approach is definitely different. I'm curious to see how you think that'll actually fare, like their schematic approach would fare in like the Big Ten.
Yeah, it's the challenge, and we touched on it earlier in the year, the challenge I put the Big Ten perhaps above any other Power Five conference is defensively you have to be ready to defend such a wide array of offenses. You know, 1 week you're taking on a basketball on grass, a team, you have to be able to defend the field laterally, and a team that's going to throw three-step passing. And the next, the very next game, you're playing Wisconsin, and they're going to run two tight ends, two running backs, and run counter and power and ISO against you. So it's a challenge personnel-wise to be able to defend those two things. I think we touched on it briefly, but I think what the defense from a schematic standpoint wants to do is they want to put the offense in a position to make mistakes and force turnovers for the defense. I think the defensively, the personnel-wise, I think things are going to change quite a bit and some schemes will change. I think they were a little bit handcuffed, especially in the coverage area with what they had to do this year. I think you will see more press coverage at times, a little more aggressive coverage, even if it's zone. And I think the defensive end position is going to transition a little bit. But ultimately, I think that the way the game is going now, you can defend even a power running team with a team that's a little bit lighter in the box if you use team speed to stop it. I think between the tackles, you're still going to need very heavy, you know, if they could clone Steven Richardson and have someone like that, you know, on the team in perpetuity, that would be great. But I think they can get away with being a little bit lighter in the box and having more team speed. I think that's what they'd like to do. And again, in the passing game, where I think they really had success, especially early in the year, was when they were able to be in zone coverage, give a man-to-man look on the snap, kind of fool defenses into thinking it's man, and getting those guys to the quarterback to make poor decisions and have the safeties or the nickel corners step in front of some passes and generate some turnovers. I think it goes along with the head coach's philosophy of, you know, taking care of the ball on the offensive side and limiting turnovers on defense. It's the opposite. You know, they want to, and coaches can talk about that all the time. And every coach will tell you, oh, we want to force turnovers on defense, force turnovers. Well, what does that actually mean? I mean, you have to actually implement a scheme that's going to do that. And I'm not trying to knock one way or another, but if you're running a scheme pass defense wise, that's predicated on man press island coverage, you can really lock teams down that way, but you're not generally going to force a lot of interceptions because quarterbacks can identify man coverage easier, and they're generally not going to throw into that tight press coverage unless they're forced to, or it's late in the game and you have a big lead and the quarterback just has to throw the ball over and over again. So it's one thing to say it, but I do think they want to build a defense that that is going to try to be opportunistic and schematically try to force the offense to turn the ball over.
Yeah, and I think we saw that, you know, at least looking at Western Michigan's like statistical profile. If you look back and study their like 2016 football study hall page, they that's what they were, right? They were very opportunistic on defense. Ryan, I guess from the recruiting perspective, do you feel that, you know, that's what they're kind of recruiting to the scheme? Do you see players that are going to fit that scheme, whether that be, you know, guys that have redshirted this year or guys that will be coming in next year?
Yeah, when you look at forward to this 18-19 defense, I think especially when you look at the 2018 recruiting class, one of the strong points of it is the defensive line, a spot where Minnesota knew that they needed to hit. That was something they placed a lot of emphasis on early in the recruiting cycle, was we have to be able to get defensive line talent in here so we don't have to play Carter Coughlin at defensive end, play an undersized Winston Dilaudy-Boudaire at defensive end, a lot of snaps there. And you look at what they've been able to do. You have a borderline four-star guy in Elijah Teague. You have Purim's Logan Richter. You look at some of the guys at defensive end like Alex Riegelsberger, Abby Okonji. You look at Maya Nahanatu as well. Again, a bunch of big defensive line bodies to where you can slide Carter Coughlin back. And I'm happy to say this is likely the last time you're ever going to see Carter Coughlin play rush defensive end, because now he's with Jonathan Celestine, now graduated. It is going to be an all-Minnesota linebacking core of Thomas Barber, Kamal Martin, and Carter Coughlin, with Blake Cashman mixing in at both linebacker spots for the next 2 years. Actually, Cashman for, I believe, just one more. But, again, Carter Coughlin was such a huge get for Minnesota back in 2016. Maybe it was 2015. Again, mine's a little foggy here now. I'm in recruiting mode. But, again, he's like a once-in-a-decade kind of a talent to come through a Minnesota high school. Able to sign him now with Celestine gone, with you getting some of the red shirts through, like Ezi Owatumu, who just won Defensive Work Team Player of the Year. I've heard a lot of good things about him. Teyon Devers, another year stronger. Winston Dilaudy-Boudaire, another year stronger. Noah Hickox, another year stronger. Again, you're able to get things there. Linebacker-wise, I do think Minnesota's got some pretty good linebackers in this class, and Josh Ani and Mariano Sorry-Marin. We'll see what Minnesota gets from Thomas Rush. And then in the defensive backs, again, you see guys like Terrell Smith, Benny Sapp. We're going to have to see how his knee is coming off another knee surgery. But guys like C.J. Smith, Tyreek Henderson, And again, we'll see what Josh Ani is down the road, but you need to get defensive back talent as well if you're going to be able to play press man. So Rob Smith can get creative with his blitzes like you saw Jay Sobel doing 15 and 16. You saw Minnesota in 2017 not trust their corners at all to play press man, and their defense was hindered because of it. And so, again, I think they're doing what they need to do on the defensive side of the ball, especially on the defensive line, and that has me optimistic for the future.
Okay, Derek, just going to throw it back to you one more time. But, you know, the drastic difference, I guess, from my perspective is how the previous regime used defensive backs, right? They were so much basically in press man almost all the time and leaned on, like you said, their safeties in run support. Just curious, you know, with this difference, what is going to need to change then from a schematic perspective?
Yeah, you're going to need to, in order to do, I think, what they want to out of the secondary and not rely on those safeties as heavily in run support, you're going to need to be really good and really athletic with your front seven. And, of course, that's easier said than done. But what Ryan's talking about is changing. I mean, if you can imagine taking a guy like Carter Coughlin, who played very well at defensive end, putting him in a linebacker position, getting a lot more athletic, and putting that speed at linebacker, they need more of that to be able to survive on their own, so to speak, with the front seven. So they're allowed to play those different coverages and run those different blitzes when they need to. I think that's also another thing being that Ryan touched on, being able to get more aggressive with the blitzes will also help the offense or force the offensive hand. And again, maybe, force turnovers, make poor decisions. So I think it's all predicated on that. But the big challenge for them, you asked about it, Luke, and how's this going to work in the Big Ten? How do you think it'll fare? I think that'll be the big challenge is putting together a front seven that can handle things on their own. And if I had to make a prediction, there may be times where it could be frustrating in the run game because I think this staff might be slow to provide that extra support in the run game. They might be willing to give up some yards in the run game and have, you know, some running backs put up big numbers if it means that they can hold things down in the passing game, create some turnovers, and ultimately it's about scoring. I know the previous staff was keyed in on that too. It's not just about total yards. It's really about scoring defense and turnover defense. So if I had to make a prediction, I would say they may be slow to provide that extra support, give up some yards in the running game when needed, but then kind of a bend don't break when they need to be able to dial up some run blitzes and bring some guys down. But I think they'll sacrifice that a bit to do what they want in the passing game and try to force some of those turnovers in the passing game.
All right, Ryan, just curious if you have, if you want any recruiting rundowns you want to hit on. I know that we're heading into, like, you know, an absolute mad time for you. I know you've touched on a lot of it with this class, but maybe even just general philosophy, right? We are familiar with the general philosophy of the previous staff. You know, they were more a live evaluation, see them in camp, offer them, maybe wait, find some diamonds in the rough and build those up. And there are many, many great examples of that they were able to identify and get a lot out of guys. But, you know, we also talked about that they need to improve, you know, just in their overall quality of recruiting. You know, MV has an incredibly great post. If you haven't seen that, Ryan should tweet it out, or I don't know, blink it somewhere. But it's a great summation just of the improvement they need to make in the recruiting game, and that's why Fleck was brought here.
It certainly was. You mentioned it. I mean, I forget what the stat is MV has. I forget if Minnesota is 8-1. Or what? I forget.
I think they're 8-1. I think you're right. I think they're 8-1 against teams that they technically out recruited, right?
Yes, in terms of Minnesota since 2015 is 8-1 against teams that they have a higher recruiting ranking than in terms of an overall team roster composition. And then they're 4-14 now against teams that have a better recruiting ranking in terms of throughout their entire team. So again, recruiting rankings matter. And I talked about this a lot. I went on kind of a rant tonight on Twitter at Ryan Burns MN that, again, you know, I've been covering recruiting now. I'm only 25. It's my sixth or seventh year now. And so I've seen Jerry Keel. I've seen Tracy Clays. I'm into the PJ Fleck era. and you kind of look through it where Jerry Kill brought this program from a dumpster fire to a New Year's Day Bowl, but then his health ultimately did him in because Norwood T had a large say in that, as Jerry Kill had to do so much fundraising for a Gopher football facility. I mean, that facility that's going to be opening here in a few weeks is the one that Jerry Kill built, in terms of with the amount of time and effort and money that he raised for that and with what he was able to do with the program. And then his health ultimately did him in because he didn't have enough hours in the day to recruit, to commit to recruiting, to commit to fundraising, to commit to his football team, and then ultimately not to his health. And so he had to retire, and Tracy Clays comes in. And while he is one of the best defensive coordinators in my mind to come through Minnesota in quite some time, I don't think he was a great head coach. And now PJ Fleck is here, and I'm looking through like the head coaching vacancies in college football right now, and I'm very thankful that Minnesota has PJ Fleck right now, because I don't think they would get PJ Fleck if they would have waited another year and stuck with Tracy Clays. With everything that's gone on, you know, Jimbo Fisher might be jumping from Florida State to Texas A&M, so Florida State's going to be open, Tennessee's open. You know, the Tennessee dumpster fire, and that social media got Greg Schiano unhired, which is unprecedented. And it just makes me sad to an extent as well. But again, you kind of see how things are rolling, that PJ has a good recruiting class, even off a 5-1 season. And I know you're bitter listening to this because Minnesota gave up 70 points in their last two games, didn't score one on offense, but there's a lot of holes on the offense. And I don't know if you want to hear it, but it's the reality. And again, I don't lie to you folks. I don't kind of look at things through maroon and gold color glasses, even though I know most of you think I do. I try to be as a straight shooter as I can, and that's just the reality. Is Minnesota has holes in their defensive backs. They have holes in their offense that need to be fixed before things can really turn to get better. Recruiting-wise, I already mentioned it. It is day one of, I think there are 23 more days until I get adequate sleep back in my life, because now is the time where I live, eat, and breathe, sleep, recruiting. My phone battery has already been recharged today once, and I'm already at 11% again. A lot of minutes being used. And so if you want to know all the recruiting knowledge, I hope you were able to take advantage of our Cyber Monday deal. Again, $50 off an annual subscription. And I can guarantee you that no one else has better Gopher football recruiting coverage on the interwebs or in anywhere across the world than we do. Between Kyle Goblersch and I think we have a very good handle of what's going on in Gopher recruiting. And again, the one thing, even if you don't subscribe, folks, even if you just follow me through the Twitter machine, I know I get a lot of emails and tweets from you guys, and I do truly appreciate them, is if you're going to be following recruiting, know this. Things are extremely fluid. Something I may say on this podcast tonight, by the time you listen to it tomorrow morning or Wednesday or Thursday, whenever you do listen to this, it's more than likely out of date, because some decision from a 17 or 18-year-old kid caused a domino effect elsewhere, where they were going to take this kid and they were seeing this kid, but, well, this kid made this decision, and so that's not it's no longer an option. So just have an open mind to, as you know, if I say something on Monday, but then I completely contradict myself by Thursday, there's a reason for that. And like, I don't like doing that, but if that's the truth, that's the information we have. Just know that recruiting is extremely fluid. Again, Minnesota, I believe, has the top-rated recruiting class now in the Big Ten West, with Vic Viramontes now in the class. So you look at a 5-win Minnesota team beating an undefeated Wisconsin team in the recruiting rankings, a Northwestern team that just is on a 7-game winning streak in the Big Ten. It's a big deal. It is a very big deal. So, again, if you want to follow along for the PJ Fleck ride and experience ahead, I encourage you to head on over to Gopher Illustrated. 23 days until National Signing Day on December the 20th. And then I get to take about a week break for Christmas to have my significant other get to know me once again, because this is quite the experience. And then 2019 recruiting starts in January and spring official visits. So it never seems to end, especially with PJ Fleck and everything he does to dedicate himself to recruiting, because he doesn't have to dedicate himself to a brand new facility to do fundraising and stuff like that. So, again, a great time to be a Gopher Illustrated member. It's going to be a crazy time. I'll have daily Coaches on the Road notes with updates and everything you want to know in terms of who is the next great Golden Gopher. We can cover you over there.
All right. I want to thank everybody for, participating or listening to the podcast this year.
Yeah, you guys were fantastic. I mean, Luke, we set download records. Again, I really do want to thank Derek Burns for coming on again most weeks. Once again, this is something he doesn't have to do. And I know that from the number of tweets I get, the number of emails, the number of comments on Gopher Illustrated, Derek, folks love your analysis. Folks love the way you're able to break down the game of football from something that is a very complicated thing. From what we discuss in text messages, you break it down to a very simple level in my eyes to kind of get your point across to folks. So on behalf of Gopher Twitter, Gopher Interwebs, the Gopher podcast community, I know that we really do want to thank you for your second straight year, I believe, on the podcast here, breaking down games. We hope you'll be back next year. We hope you're not in Saskatchewan or in the Canadians or wherever you are. So I know that I'm extremely grateful for your contributions here once again this season, Derek. So thank you.
I appreciate it, guys. And I really enjoy doing it. And I appreciate the work you're doing. I'm a Gopher fan. I'm a huge college football fan. And I think you guys are doing a good job providing some more coverage in what I think has traditionally been an underserved market for college athletics. So I appreciate it and appreciate you having me on.
All right. So just to wrap up, I'm sure that Ryan and I are not quite done with the podcasting season this year. I'm sure that we'll talk some recruiting.
Unfortunately, folks live and die by recruiting. So
yeah,
I know that Luke and I haven't really talked about it off the podcast, but my plan is, Luke, we'll probably do one around the December 8th weekend.
Yeah,
that's going to be the biggest recruiting weekend in quite some time. 30 plus official visitors. There's going to be a lot to talk about. And then we'll do a National Signing Day breakdown one, and we'll go from there. But again, we do really want to thank you guys. Luke and I, we already mentioned it. We set download records again because you guys are fantastic, and we do truly appreciate you guys and everything that you guys do. So we know that time is the most precious thing you have, and the fact that you're able to listen to us for hours on end this season is something we're very grateful for. So Luke, you want to take us out?
Yeah. So again, I want to thank everybody for listening, for all the commutes that we hopefully helped you kill, and maybe even workouts as well. Appreciate it. We'll be back, and stay subscribed. We appreciate it. Go Gophers.